This is Radio Free Galaxy. It's time to go.
This is the space age, and we are here to go.
3, 2, 1, 0. Through heaven and earth.
Welcome to Radio Free Galaxy. I'm Travis Lee.
I'm Teen Komar.
And this is Take 5.
This is episode 105 of Radio Free Galaxy. No Trisha this week. She'll be joining us next week. She had a show last night.
Last night.
It'll be last week by the time anyone hears this, so I guess I was technically right by accident. She had a show last night at Last Rites Milwaukee with Billy Batts and the Made Men, and another band that is escaping my memory right now, but I'm sorry that we couldn't make the show. It looked like it was really cool. But we are going to soldier on. We are going to be reviewing... Let me see if I can get the name right. I'm like trying to think of what the actual name of the movie is.
Oh, good, go.
Fantastic Beasts, The Secrets of Dumbledore, right?
Ding, ding, ding.
Okay.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, yeah. We're going to be reviewing that because, I don't know, we didn't make it to a theater this week, and really there isn't that much interesting streaming new that we're already not talking about. You know, Miss Marvel is new, and I kind of didn't even know that it came out until just like earlier today. There was not a lot of publicity and hype about it like coming out. Like, I knew it was coming out at some point, but I didn't know it was like, boom, it's out. And like, so like, I guess we'll get to that maybe next week or the week after. I don't know what's going on with Miss Marvel, but I'll definitely check it out and we'll give a review. But we saw that, hey, The Secrets of Dumbledore is streaming, so we're going to review that this week. We never got to it when it was in theaters because I'm not paying to watch it based upon especially the last Fantastic Beasts movie. The first one I liked all right. It was fine. The second one, though, was something else. There's only been two, right?
Before Dude,
this. This is the third.
Yes, this is the third.
I had a conversation with you after the movie. I'm like, wait, did we see all these movies? Because I can't even remember if there's two or three. Like,
The one we just watched is the third one.
Okay, it could have fooled me.
The last one was The Crimes of Grindelwald. The first one was Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Right. And, like... Yeah, we'll get to it.
We'll talk about it.
Right.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that, and we'll also hit Obi-Wan Kenobi episode 4, and maybe we'll sneak in a little Stranger. Let's sneak in some Stranger Things talk right now, Christine.
Okay.
Stranger Things for episode 4. Is one of the best. It's one of the best episodes of anything I've seen ever. Am I wrong?
No, dude. So like this entire episode was based on Max, and all I could think about was the Mighty Max cartoon and like little Micro Machine Polly Pocket figures, because oh my god, this has got everything that I've ever wanted in like a rad kid in power movie that's more spooky. Like, they nailed it. I'm savoring the next episode when it comes up because they got it.
The actress that plays Max is so phenomenal. She's so amazing. The way that she projects genuine emotion and acting like a legitimate teenager is just amazing. And the ending of that episode with the Kate Bush song running up that hill. I mean, there's a reason I just saw that song, which was from the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s, Kate Bush released that song, is now like hitting like number one streaming on like Spotify and stuff. And there's a reason, because it was crafted together with that episode so well. It was amazing.
Dude, not only that, the fact that she was saved by a Walkman.
She was saved by a Walkman,
which, dude, what a cool way to do that, where like they're throwing like, what's her favorite song? You know, throwing like the cassettes in there and just playing it old school. Like, now if you're a kid from like the 80s and 90s, you've probably had a Walkman. I don't know about anyone in the last 20 years, but like, I don't know. Maybe that's going to bring back the trend of those, because like, dude, having a cassette Walkman was totally rad.
Well, they're already making new cassette, making Walkmans. All the ones that are being made right now are really, really shitty. Low quality. Nobody's making a high quality one. I heard about some custom company that's making some really nice quality ones, but they're ridiculously expensive.
Right. And it's just like buying, like, it's on par with buying a high end, like, record player at this point.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There's no affordable.
And the thing with getting like a cassette tape player, it isn't like you're buying a record player. There's no reason for it to be like ridiculously boutique-y expensive. Like, do you want it to be rugged and dependable? Yes, that is the first and only real actual requirement besides playing a tape in stereo.
Right.
If you can play it in stereo and you can drop the thing from waist level onto concrete without the tape coming flying out.
Yeah,
and the device itself not breaking permanently.
Yeah,
then you basically, what you're looking for is an old Sony Sport fucking cassette player.
Exactly. The sport models that have the locking mechanism over the cassette door. I'm looking at one that I have right up here. It's not a Sony. This one's the Iowa, but just as good of a company as
My mom found me one, like, our freshman year of high school, Travis.
Yeah.
And at a rummage sale. And I just, like, okay, I went and bought, like, you know, $8 earbuds. And the next 2 years of high school, I would wear a hoodie and earbuds, and nobody was the wiser that I wasn't listening.
Yep. The invention of earbuds for people with long hair in like the late 80s, early 90s was the most amazing thing, because we realized we could sit and listen to music and nobody knew that we were listening to music, and we could completely ignore everybody. So we would get away with it frequently in class in high school.
Right. And then we get like a 3.5 millimeter splitter.
Yeah.
So it's like, yes, you plug it into the headphone jack. Well, now you have two headphone jacks. Travis, what? Let me plug in. All right, people. Absolutely. Now you got two people listening to the same song.
What was your favorite, not favorite album of all time, but can you think, Adam?
That lived in my Walkman?
What was your favorite tape? What was your favorite tape of all time? Not necessarily your favorite album, your favorite record, anything like that, but your favorite tape of all time that you owned.
All right. So, overqualified answer to this question.
Which is what I expect from you.
The Beastie Boys' Ill Communication lived in my Walkman longer than any other fucking tape, besides the mixtape I made that had all my favorite Nine Inch Nails songs, all my favorite fucking Filter songs, Primus, Slayer, Metallica, and Megadeth on it. So it was like a 90-minute TDK average quality audio cassette tape that lived in my Walkman that auto-switched directions.
Yeah.
But that in the Beastie Boys' Ill Communication.
The auto switch directions, by the way, on a Walkman is like the bomb. You don't have to fucking take it out and flip it over. It was,
yeah.
I've got one like that. It's fucking the best. But also in terms of Walkmans, Sony has always been the standard. They came up with the term Walkman, and like, almost every Sony Walkman that I still find today still fucking works. And if they don't work, all they require is a new belt.
A new belt and like some denatured rubbing alcohol to clean the fucking magnetic head.
Exactly. That's really it. But almost every one that I pick up and throw batteries in, as long as it hasn't been corroded by some old batteries sticking in it for the last 30 years, they almost all still work. And, you know, they're not making new Walkmans or quality ones, but you know what? Those old Sony ones still fucking work, so.
Right.
Grab yourself one of them. Okay, that's enough.
That's enough. Stranger
Things. Oh wait, I didn't ask you. Well, you know, I didn't ask you your favorite tape, Christine, and I don't think I said mine either. But you kind of missed the boat.
Oh,
on so the tapes, right?
Unfortunately, I only had one cassette tape as a kid because we only had like one Walkman. And you're probably gonna hate me because it was New Kids on the Block with Step by Step. It was a single.
Oh, yeah.
At that point. Step, yeah. So, like, I mean, I had the CD Walkman because that was more of my era.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that would have been Korn, their first one.
For sure. I would... probably Blood Sugar Sex Magic is was my favorite tape of all time. I mean, that thing went to school with me every single morning.
Right, right.
I mean, Def Leppard Hysteria was the first tape that I ever bought with, like, making my own decisions. Like, here, kid, we're taking you to Target. We just bought you Walkman. You can pick out your own tape. I picked out Def Leppard Hysteria. But, I mean, and it's still one of my favorite tapes of all time.
Alvin and the Chipmunks Christmas album.
Oh, man. Bro, I just sold that album last week to somebody. Hey, it's still highly desirable. Yeah. But Blood Sugar Sex Magic is such a perfectly crafted album, and yeah.
Right, because I could walk up on you at any point in time, watch the motion of your shoulders and your head, and I didn't need to hear your Walkman, you know, so loud that I could hear it out, you know, standing next to you. I could just jump in and be like, I know exactly what song's played, because Travis had a different dance for every goddamn song. And it'd be like, and I knew at what point in the song, it'd be like,
yeah.
I just look at him and it's like, except for, you know, I got stopped by a lady cop in my... I can't sing the rest because copyright, but you get the idea.
Yeah.
But, like, Travis would be mouthing the lyrics to that, and I'd be like, all right.
I mean, 1991, it was right at the end of tapes, you know? I mean, CDs are coming in at that point, but, like, nobody you actually knew had any. You know, I remember when we were hanging out at the pirate radio station that Adam and I hung out at, and in like 93, 94 type era, like we had wall of tapes there. There were like walls of records and like all that. And then we had one little Sony CD Walkman that was hooked up to all the radio equipment, and we had a stack of like five CDs, and those were the only CDs that we actually had at this
and
radio
like,
station.
And they were Columbia House, like like acquired, like so. There was a catalog CD.
Man, Columbia House, dude, that was my shit for a while.
I think just about everybody born pre like, I don't know, 2000 owes like Columbia House like some serious revenue.
Yeah.
Dude, I don't think anyone understands ordering catalogs physically, you know, and having to write down the multiple numbers to get the right CD. And then you usually got the wrong one anyway because no one gave a shit at Columbia House. It's like, whatever, it's a CD, take it.
Right. Like, and the thing is like, this is clearly before computers were super, super fucking, like, available. Because in today's day and age, the shit that we used to pull on Columbia House to get, like, extra CDs and DVDs would never fucking happen. Because the first thing that's going to happen is like, oh, red flag, it's going to this address.
Yeah.
Well, there's already a member with that address. Well, cancel the request.
Yep.
And because it's online, you'll get your request has been denied, and like, thing, like, at near instant speed. But because it was mail order back then, like, aha, you go in the Sunday paper, and, like, there's a Columbia House thing in the on the comic section again. Call your buddies. Hey, Columbia House is offering again. All your buddies, go get the stamp and an envelope from your parents.
Yeah.
Like, how many different fake names did have you grown up with as a kid before 18? Like, how many known aliases do you have for Columbia House? Like, how could you not? And of course, none of us would ever coordinate.
Was Columbia House kind of like the movie pass of the 80s?
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, a business model that was just set up for exploitation and to fail.
Dude, huge. I mean, right. Think about how much stuff you would order. Like, you get these huge boxes of, like, CDs and movies and, like, books and stuff, and you never pay right. it. So, and, like, they could only send you a sore letter once in a while. It's like, oh, if you don't do this, we're going to make you sorry. And they never really
did.
Well,
I remember that because was the first mark I ever got on my credit report was from Columbia right. House, I think.
Columbia right. House.
And because my sister already had, or my brother, or somebody in my family had already ordered from my house,
yeah.
that wasn't on my original credit report. That wasn't, like, I used some other name. I think I signed my cat Smokey up. So,
Smokey was you.
So they, yeah, and they, and like, all right. So anyone who's young and doesn't understand Columbia House, like, so in the audio cassette era, it's like you sign this a tacit agreement that you're going to order six more. Audio cassette tapes at a later date and time within the next 2 years at full price plus shipping and handling. In return, you're going to pay $10 in shipping and handling, being billed for it, and they'll send you 12 audio cassettes off this, I honestly, like, a decent but not great list of, like, yeah. music.
No, it was things that were very popular at the time or things that Columbia House had license for, you know, and they could distribute. Right. And I just remember being, you know, a young preteen or, you know, whatever, and getting, like, my first package of, like, 8 or 10 or 12, whatever it was, like, 8 plus 1. There were so many, like, different deals, and it was just, like, 8 cassette tapes for a penny, you know? And whatever. I remember getting that first package with all those beautiful sealed tapes and, like, the beautiful artwork and everything, and just feeling like, wow, this is, like, kind of dangerous and sexy and cool, and just, like, listening to those first batch of, I don't
right.
know,
and like,
salacious things.
Ooh,
you know,
salacious.
Yeah, like, and you get the things where it's like parental advisory, it's got Ooh. That sticker. You know what, Tipper Gore, Al Gore's wife, did one great thing for all of us when we were kids growing up. And so some of you just will never understand how fortunate you are for Tipper Gore. She made it easy for us to identify exactly which album we wanted to buy. Like, okay, so there's a clean version and an explicit version of a tape. Before Tipper Gore, you had to really look at the artwork, the cover, read the side of it, go on the back. Nope. Come Tipper Gore, big black, white fucking rectangle in the lower right hand corner of every CD
that says to every teenager, buy me.
Buy me.
This
now.
Is the one. This is the one that does not have the radio cut version of the song that you love. This is the one where they drop the F bomb. You know, like, it was just so great.
NWA, I don't know who that is, but
now I will.
They're telling
them.
Me to buy it.
Buy
yeah, and then
buy
after
me.
And then after reading it, you're like, NWA means niggas with attitude? That is great. They're out of
yes.
Compton? Where is Compton? California? It's a neighborhood in L.A.? And then, yeah, the next thing you know, you're fully entrenched and you're wondering what happened to Biggie.
Exactly. So, tapes, they're fun. Okay, Christine, we had some fun this weekend.
Oh,
we got to go to the remnants of an estate sale. So, we had gone to an estate sale a couple weeks ago, where it was the nephew of a woman who had passed away, and the woman had been a hoarder. Well, I don't know if I was kind of a hoarder. I don't know. I didn't see the state of the house before, you know, things were set up, but it seems with the amount of stuff that was in there that, yeah, she was kind of a hoarder. And she was a collector of sports memorabilia, particularly from Wisconsin, so the Badgers, the Bucks, the Brewers, Packers, all that kind of thing. Stuff from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And she was also a huge Disney collector.
So much Disney.
So there was tons of stuff from the 80s and 90s from the Disney store and Disneyland, things like that. And we ended up going to the estate sale a couple weeks ago and just buying a ton of stuff. The family was running the sale. They hadn't hired outside help, and they were really overwhelmed with getting rid of this stuff. They have a deadline to get rid of it because they already sold the house, and the house needs to be 100% cleaned out by the time that they sell it, or the sale is, you know, goes through. So They were just pretty much giving stuff away for almost nothing. And then eventually, on the last day of the sale, we went back and bought some more stuff. And they said to us, hey, you guys bought a lot of stuff from us. Do you want to just come back when we start cleaning the house out and you can help us out cleaning the house out and you can have basically whatever you want that's still left from these huge collections basically for free? So yesterday was the day that we got to go in and see what was left of everything and just dig through this house of amazing pop culture memorabilia from the last 40 years.
Mm-hmm. I imagine, like, when that question got asked of you, like, I see, like, the little, like, thought imaginary bubble pop open, and there's just a picture of Cartman. Hell yeah, I want some cheesy poofs.
Like, yeah, basically, yeah.
We're like,
of course. Nothing brings Christine and I greater joy in life than digging through your old shit. Okay, so just be aware that when any of you pass away and you have amazing collections of shit, Christine and I will be digging through it more than likely and we'll enjoy it. Yes, we will have respect for your things, but that's exactly why Christine and I like doing these things, because we think of ourselves as pop culture archaeologists and preservers of these kind of things. You know, we like to find these things, dig them out where they're hiding, save them from getting thrown away, and then pass them on to people that appreciate these things and feel like their lives would be enhanced if they had these things in their lives.
Oh, for sure. Like, I've always wanted to be an archaeologist. I was inspired by Indiana Jones, but I also love pop culture, and this is right up my alley with what we do. And this was just like, this lady wasn't dirty by any means. Like, the stuff had a little bit of dust on it, but most of the stuff was, like, brand new, still in the bags it was bought in. Like, I actually kept some of these original, like,
Woolworth's bags,
yeah. These weird TV, like, radio station bags. Yeah. Like, she had everything, and it was, like, kind of weird because it was, like, a tree trunk. Like, the closest to the stairs was, like, the newer stuff, but, like, the further in, it was just
the closer you get to the inner circle.
Yeah. Like, I love a good attic or basement. You know, you say, I don't want to be in the basement. And I'm like, oh, just get out of my way. Give me a headlamp. Give me some gloves. And let me go crawl around like a crab or Smeagol. Because, okay, when we went over there yesterday, like, it wasn't too hot. But, like, up in the attic, it's, like, really high-pitched. And you guys would be hitting your head the entire time. And you would have just been frustrated. But for me, I'm, like, just crab crawling around. Like, la, 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 la.
Christine, as a tall person, I've long ago learned that there are some places I can just at a glance look and be like, I'm not going in there.
Yep.
I'm going to tear my scalp open on a fucking nail.
Yeah, you would have been miserable up there. But for me, I'm like, okay, let me just, you know, go do my own thing. Like, the guy that was running it and this other guy were kind of like throwing stuff. I'm like, hey, you know what? I'm going to go root around and see if there's anything I can just huck over this way. But like, I found so many.
So what are some of the cool things that?
All right,
you
well,
found?
One of the greatest things I found that was laying in this inconspicuously like brown shipping box was a 1979 Mattel's Battlestar Galactica Daggett that talks.
A talking Whoa. Daggett. It's a talking Daggett plush.
Yeah.
And I actually have it. It was in unused, completely unused condition. It was still in the same box that it was sold in 1979. And
no,
I have it sitting here right in front of me. the Battlestar Galactica Talking Daggett, very rare item, worth a lot of money, by Mattel, 1979. And the mechanism for it to talk is a pull string. So it's got a pull string on it. And do you want to give it a go? Do you want to hear how it sounds?
Yeah, let's get it go, dude.
Now, this is what it sounds like. It's been sitting for the last 43 years. But we're going to... I don't know what it's supposed to say, but this is currently what it does. You didn't hear that? Good. We didn't either.
That's about right.
I was going to say, like, this thing is, it was so weird and so strange up in this attic, because the thing is, this woman, I wouldn't really call a hoarder, but like a supply, like, if she was going to have a store, she had multiples of everything, like vintage Halloween, like blow up, like lanterns and stuff. She had 20 of them. if
it's
you were
kind of a hoarder.
Yeah, like it was kind of a hoarder, but like at least it was all kind of like mildly organized, except right. for the people that went through. And right. what the greatest thing was is that no one else had been up there since the last time we were there. So it was pretty much kind of a virginal state.
We found a lot of cool
oh,
stuff.
Oh God. The things I hated though, okay, like this she clearly only had girls, or at least it felt like it, because I'm like, oh, there's gotta be some boy toys up here somewhere. Like I was actually kind of excited to run into, you know, some really cool 80s boy toys.
Yeah.
No. I got the worst luck of coming across every single Cabbage Patch doll just for like, there was like 30 or 40 of them.
Well, some people would consider that good luck.
I hate those things.
I know,
things.
You don't like Cabbage Patch stuff.
I do
but
not like
them. There were dozens and dozens
yes.
of original Cabbage Patch kids still in their original packaging. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you grab any of them?
No.
I grabbed some of the smaller stuff, and I gave Neil.
I remember like 1982 when those fucking things came out.
Yeah.
Or 1981, whatever.
Yeah.
The ridiculousness of that and Trivial Pursuit.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Like, yes, they came out in like the same fucking year, dude. There were like news stories on all three children. Fucking networks.
All three. Ooh.
Yes. On ABC, NBC, and CBS. Now Fox.
I've never liked Cabbage Patch dolls. And
well, go ahead.
Well, and the thing is, like, they were so big and so ridiculous that I'm like, this is just something that I don't deal with, and I would rather pass it on to somebody else that can.
That's the problem in terms of reselling them. And in terms of us reselling them is because we have very limited space to store our stuff that we resell. And an original Cabbage Patch Kid in its packaging is enormous.
It's okay, to give you, if you've never, so for all of our younger listeners, the box itself is approximately 18 inches by 12 inches by fucking like 22 to 24 inches.
Yeah, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's about 18 inches wide, it's about 12 inches deep, and it's about 24 inches tall. That's the original packaging. Yeah. As they got older, like as they like the years went on, like when they introduced the preemies, those ones were like the size of like Giannis's shoebox,
right?
Like, you know, hey, Shaq's shoe like box is like about the size of this toy box, you know.
No, the packaging on the original ones was definitely not minimalist, because
no, it
the
was
doll
huge.
It's this huge fucking packaging for this doll that's really could be in a much smaller package.
Well,
but right. and then I found one yesterday and I gave it to Neil. It's the twins package, so it's got two full size Cabbage Patch dolls and accessories in it. It like barely fit in a kitchen size garbage bag.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Neil, do you want this? And he's like, yeah, of course. But he's got a whole big basement to stick his stuff in, and I just don't have the room to be storing Cabbage Patch twins packages five at a time.
Right.
You know, so, like, we left a lot of the, and there were some other people there, and they took some of the Cabbage Patch stuff, but, like, we
Thank
just couldn't
goodness,
take any
that's
of
like,
it.
That's just, like, leaving money on the table, man.
Yeah.
Like, I'm
and
sorry.
They were throwing away so much stuff, and we just had to save some of it, but we couldn't save everything.
Yeah.
So we called up a couple friends. Bob came. Neil came. They both loaded up their cars. You should have seen.
Dude,
Neil
waited,
barely had
like,
a space for his daughter in his car.
He's like, where am I going to sit?
We're gonna strap you to the hood of the car, kid, because this is money. Yeah. If I had been burned out this week, I would have came, dude. If I would have saw those Cabbage Patch Kids, I would have. Well, how much room do I got in my closet? Actually, it'd been more. How much room do I have in my car? Can I go get my sister's minivan? Because I would have grabbed at least four of them. Because without looking at them right now on eBay, I would give you 5% of the 5% of the cut, and then just have you deal with the packaging and shipping on it.
No, I don't want to.
No, I don't
want
to.
No,
I don't
want to. No,
I don't
want
to. No,
I don't want to. I don't want to.
No, but that's the thing. It's like it. One of those things. It's just the idea of being the first to go and find them. But I was just like,
I gotta look now. You guys, I'm sorry about the clickety clack.
No, clickety clack away. But like, it was just so fun because also when I was up there, I found three vintage Halloween pinatas.
Oh, and yeah, from the 80s.
Those are super cute. Very like, I cool. found, like, a witch, a cat, and a ghost. I'm like, well, I've never seen these before. Really Hope cool. they can fit in the car. Like, what did you find?
I found some Police Academy Shrinky Dinks.
Oh, God, you did. They are so cute.
Police Academy Shrinky Dinks. If you didn't know they made them, they sure did, and they are awesome.
They are amazing. there were so many things I just couldn't believe that were just sitting there mint. Yeah. It's like, a lot of this stuff was still sealed. Like, yeah. just, like, I don't know, maybe she was saving it for a rainy day for something. Somebody and just that day never came, but then like we came along and it's like dude, I don't know where I'm gonna put this stuff, but I'm gonna figure it out.
We definitely loaded up the cars in embarrassment of riches, and
yeah,
it's very fun. It was very fun. So yeah, that's
actually what... now that I'm looking at it on eBay, which I would have checked while I was there,
yep.
at about $75 or best offer, I don't know if I would.
No, exactly.
And that's and for that, like a 1984 one.
Right, and that's like, what they're up for. That's not actually usually what they sell,
for. Well, right.
Here's the thing. There are some that do sell for a lot of yes. money, but I do not have the patience while I'm up in an attic with no breathability. I'm like, I have a limited amount of energy and time. Like, I don't have time to look up that stuff.
Yes, they were.
They were made by Coleco.
And you can find some great Cabbage Patch Kids commercials from 1984 on the Radio Free Galaxy YouTube channel, because I just put some up. We have the Koosas commercial, which were their weird little pets.
They're monster babies.
And we have a Cabbage Patch pinups commercial and a regular Cabbage Patch accessories commercial up on the Radio Free Galaxy YouTube channel, so look for that. But yeah, it's like the economics of space, right, Christine? Like, we have limited space, so when we have something that's that big, we have to consider how long it's going to be sitting there. And right. for every week that it's sitting there, that's costing us money on that shelf where we can't be putting 10 other things, 10 cassette tapes that are really worth more than that, 10 whatevers that we could be putting there in that space. And I mean, there are so many of them that are still out there.
Oh, God. You know? And you know what, dude? You grabbed me a weird doll, though, that wasn't a Cabbage Patch doll.
Yeah, what's it called?
Oh, it's called Sleepy Sam or something.
Sleepy Sam? No, I think it's like something else.
Sleepy Sandman or Sammy Sandman. It doesn't matter. So yeah. in this pile of dolls, I don't know how I missed it. I must have thought it was a Cabbage Patch doll and just hucked it aside, but he saved it. And he's like, hey, do you want to deal with this doll? And I pull it out. This has got the creepiest fuck eyes on a doll I've ever seen, and he has a little book with him, and if you look him up, like, on the, like, the box, because I think they got rid of the original box, there's a dad doing the silence look while the kid looks like she's dying along with the mom.
And also one of the
One
of the creepiest things about that doll was it has a horrifying appearance, but then when you take it out of the box that it was stored in, it had just its head covered in a plastic
yes.
bag, so it was more of a like horror scene too, because you pull out this baby doll and it's got no plastic around it except for just the head has this plastic bag around it, and you're like, my God, what's going on here right now?
Yeah, because like I was like horrified at looking at this suffocated doll that looks like I was saying a lot of bad things about it too, so I'm really hoping in the middle of the night that thing is just not standing at the end of my bed waiting to sing me its lullaby song, because it has this little turn thing, like, and it starts singing Mr. Sandman.
Yeah.
It would be cool if it did Enter Sandman by Metallica, but it doesn't.
No. if it sings Mr. Sandman, you want to put like barely able to do anything batteries in it, so it's like
yeah. I tell you what, we'll take a picture of the Daggett and the creepy sleepy doll, and we'll put them up on the Radio Free Galaxy Instagram, so you guys can see them. So by the time you hear this podcast, you should be able to look at those two things. We got to take a break right now. We're running over time. We got to get to our Dumbledore movie, whatever. Secret.
We're late for a tea party, dude.
Secret, whatever. Who cares? We'll take a break and be back right after this. This episode of Radio Free Galaxy is brought to you by Eddie Vedder's Cheddarwurst. Eddie Vedder's Cheddarwurst are the only brand of cheese-filled sausage that will keep you even flowing all day long. Find them in your local supermarket today. Eddie Vedder's Cheddarwurst. Mm-mm. Alright, welcome back to Radio Free Galaxy. Travis, Christine, and Adam here. And we are going to be doing a spoiler review of Fantastic... I have to pause for a second before you say the title just to make sure you get it right. And don't because I want to keep saying The Crimes of Grindelwald. Because that seems like what this movie is. I mean, I guess there's a bunch of Dumbledore's secrets. Yeah, he does have a bunch of secrets. And we'll get into what exactly his secrets all are. Because I think I want to try to go through and list what all of his secrets are. Because there are multiple secrets of Dumbledore. So, we'll get into this movie. Let's first talk about our prior Harry Potter and Fantastic Beasts experiences and fandoms. Now, Christine, I know you're probably the big, without a question, you're probably, I keep saying probably, you're the biggest Harry Potter fan of us three, yeah. I would say. And
is she, though? Is she really?
Well, see, I love the Wizarding World with Harry Potter in it. I like the earlier ones.
Yeah, that's
I'm
where
I'm more of
that's,
an earlier fan than the more serious separate. Part.
Because yeah. You're a fan of the first three movies more than I am, especially the first two. I do like the third one, but the first two are real hard to watch these days. They're real hard to watch. Those precocious little shitheads really get on my nerves. I love the whole, you
especially
know,
especially because they all three of them have moved on to do such great other roles.
Yes, absolutely, and they are great actors now. However, back then, they were not, and they're still fun movies, but if I'm going to put on a Potter, I want to put on more four, three, four, five,
yeah,
really, right. is right. What I want to watch. That's where the sweet spot lies in that series for me, especially The Order of the Phoenix. I just adore that movie, and also...
The Goblet of Fire. Were
yeah,
cool.
Goblet of Fire is really good.
Yeah, so. Anyway, I'm a Harry Potter fan, but I interrupted you. You're definitely more of a fan of the Harry Potter series than probably.
You definitely got Travis beat.
Yeah, definitely. So how do you feel about the Fantastic Beasts series so far? Like.
I absolutely hate it. And I am. Not going into spoilers yet, but, like, you know what? If I'm going to go with Fantastic Beasts, which the first one, it did deliver that. It showed me a bunch of Fantastic Beasts and some weird dude, and I actually want to watch Kowalski, his little sidekick, more than anything, because at least he's entertained. I do not like the world that they're in.
What do you think the biggest problem is? The difference between the Harry Potter movies and the Fantastic Beasts movies, where is the separation in the joy that you find in Harry Potter to the Fantastic
Beasts?
There
is no joy.
That's it,
there
right?
is no, that's, there is none. Okay, so let me just go on my little rant right here. Yeah. The thing I like about the original Wizarding World with Harry Potter, even though you don't like the first two, is that there was so much whimsy and joy when it came to using magic, because... Yes. I've always wanted to be a magic user. I mean, anyone who's played any kind of RPG or Dungeons & Dragons type game, if you were a spellcaster, you know, you want to do some cool shit. Mm-hmm. In the Fantastic Beasts, quote unquote, the magic is sterile, it's boring, it's not there, it's just, like, dude, why are you learning magic if you're just going to be a stuck-up whatever?
Well, part of the problem is that in these movies, for me, the magic or the joy of the magic gets lost because you're dealing with mostly adults who are not amazed by magic anymore. So you don't have that, Harry Potter type character that's walking around amazed by all the magic that he sees, except for Jacob Kowalski. So they make Jacob Kowalski kind of the audience surrogate that Harry Potter was. You know, Harry Potter really is along for the ride for most of the Harry Potter series. He's the audience surrogate. You're supposed to be seeing the events happening through his eyes.
Well, but the thing is, even in his world, the adults still did whimsical and cool things. Yes. There, it does not exist in any of the Fantastic Beasts movies.
Right.
Like, the buildings are straight and narrow and boring. Basically, you just have a guys in, like, trench coats and fedora hats waving around a wand, and it is boring. Like, it is just boring. And then you try to throw politics on top of that. Yeah. Like, all they did was erase whatever our world's politics in the now and threw them into that world. That, like, it's just, it's not very imaginative.
I'd say it's imaginative, but it's telling such a darker story that you're losing out on, like you said, the joy of the original Harry Potter series. And I do find some moments where I like this series a lot, and there's certain things that I do like, but overall, the story is just not grabbing me. There's so many silly things that are happening that just don't make any sense. The timeline is so weird and messed up. I don't understand any of it. And then you have also the casting weirdness that's going on with, you know, Johnny Depp and Mads Mikkelsen. I mean, whatever. It's barely, you know, explained in canon, so
there's too much going on that they're trying to go and spin too many plates in these movies. If they would just focus on one thing, kind of like what they did with the first one, which, I mean, for most of all, that was actually a movie about the Fantastic Beasts and where to find them. The rest of them, just like, he's kind of just the backseat driver at that point and kind of just shows up once in a while. Like, it's not... Yeah, I don't know. They just went in too many directions with this and just lost me.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not that compelling, and
no.
The last one was terrible. I thought this one was better than the last one, but I mean, that's not really saying much, you know? Adam, where are you sitting at with Fantastic Beasts overall?
So, this part of the wizarding world of Harry Porker... I really enjoyed the first one where we, you know, it's a period piece though, so that's rough for me. I don't really particularly care for period pieces.
Yeah.
That's why I won't see movies such as Titanic, because I give zero fucks about the attention paid to that detail.
Yeah.
When it comes to Harry Potter, yes, I have read the books because it was something to read, and when you're staring down, like, a shelf of books...
Yeah.
I rather enjoyed the books. The books, obviously, movies, books, differences. I haven't read the books for these, if there are any, and... Man, like, the first one was good. I like Johnny Depp, you know, as Grindelwald. And then Mads Mikkelsen being Grindelwald would be fine if he was Grindelwald in the last one.
Yeah.
And the age difference between Dumbledore and Grindelwald... Like, visually, going from the last one to this one is really jarring. Like,
it is, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, like, the thing is I don't... The wonder that's lost, the magic, as it were, it's really because I don't think these were made for children, per se.
No.
And it's like, it's kind of like, okay, these were... made for people who grew up reading Harry Potter, and now they're adults. So it's like it needs to be a little bit more mature, a little bit more... It's weird because Kowalski fought in World War One. Man, he saw some shit.
Mm.
Like, this is 19... This movie takes place in, like, 1932. So, I mean, we're not yet on that fucking, that downward slope where Hitler's rising to prominence and power. I mean, he's just getting, you know, doing whatever he's doing. So, and it's about the wizarding world. It's not about our world. And that's kind of, like...
That's kind of the problem, is they make these ones a little too much about the real world.
Right, but it's like, in the wonder of the magic and everything, we still get that through Kowalski, but like in the first ones, like, Weasley knows, like, you know, he knows magic. He's you know, a true blood, more or less. He grew up in the world of magic. His siblings, you know, his dad works for, you know, the ministry, in the Bureau of Muggle Affairs. So, I mean, he's got like some, he gets the stories about weird shit muggles do, you know, from his dad. You know, he's got his cool mom who's, you know, a magic homemaker. He's got his older brothers who have been going to Hogwarts. He's got his little sister. But he grew up with magic. He knows what to expect. Hermione, she's like so technical because, you know, her parents are muggles, but she happens to be, you know, got the gift, but she dives in wholeheartedly. And with Harry, it's like his life sucks so bad. Like, everything is wonderful. Like, even Hagrid's fucking, like, watered down ass is like, amazing to him. Mm-hmm. Until you get in, like, you know, the Deathly Hallows, and, like, Harry kind of actually, I guess, starts realizing his power. And you're right, Christine. Like, if you played, like, I don't know, Fable or any of the SSI D&D games, Baldur's Gate. Like, you understand, like, starting out, man, that mage is fragile, you know, like those kids, yeah. They're like, they're underpowered, but like, by year five, they're not fucking punks anymore, they're like, they're coming into it, and all these adults fucking throwing spells around and shit, and like, this current, like, 1930s era, like, you kind of see more of, like, from the adult perspective, and yes, it does lose it, but man, that first one was great, dude. It was like, dude, Travis, man. Like, the D&D movies that came out with fucking Marlon Wayans and...
Yeah.
Oh,
like
I forgot about that one.
Terrible. Like, and part of it is because we just didn't have the CGI and, like, the practical and, you know, computer-generated effects. Plus, the writing was shitty. But, like...
Well, but Jeremy Irons was in that movie, and that kind of was great.
Yeah.
Eh.
he was the only saving grace in that movie. That movie was awful.
Eh. Yeah. I mean, you can throw a good star in a movie, but you're still fucking gifted.
I can think of a long list of movies with great actors that suck. So yeah.
Right.
So like, let's get specifically to this movie. So, I mean, yeah, I thought this was better than the last one, but it's not a good movie.
We're still polishing a turd.
Yeah, it's a continuation of story. It doesn't stand alone as a singular movie. You can't watch this out of context and understand anything that's going on. I've seen every Harry Potter thing that's ever been on a screen, and there were times during this movie where I didn't know what was happening. I was... What are some of my exclamations I made
my God.
Out loud
okay,
while I was
Adam,
watching
Adam,
it?
This movie was awful, but the exclamation from Travis was so great. Okay, so, like, he started screaming. He's like, come quick! Like, look! Like, yeah! Like, and the part that I am talking about, like, he was pointing at the screen with both of his hands and waving and saying, yeah, as loud as he could, because there's that part where he's trying to save his brother from... the shrimp people dance.
Well, no, like, it was so ridiculous. His brother gets locked up in Germany.
Yeah.
And he's got to break him out. But...
No, Travis...
the way they have to get around breaking him out is they have to dance like the little crab monsters.
Crab people!
And Newt is explaining, like the psychology of why he's imitating them.
Right.
No,
like,
but the thing
it's
is,
it's like you're not wiggling enough.
Travis, yeah,
you have to sway your hips like blah. And I was like,
so
what
Travis was losing his mind, like his by minute 12, because he had to pause it, and he's like, oh shit, we're 12 minutes in, and they finally showed, you know,
they showed
the title
card
of the movie,
the title card, and popped up. I checked. At 12 minutes into the movie.
Yeah, but
the cold open of the movie was 12 minutes long.
But the thing is, Travis has this very defiant childlike nature where he'll kind of slam the remote down like a child who just has given up on life. It's like, But like, he's like, what's going on now?
Intro has to be good. Like a good example of like the cold intro done right is every Bond movie ever.
I was just going to say that. There are plenty of Bond movies that have 12-minute cold opens, okay? But, I mean, a Bond movie, that's what you're supposed to do in a Bond movie, is you just get sucked right into the opening scene so that you're in Bond's world.
Running.
You're in Bond's world. They want to make you feel like you're in that world before they remind you that you're in a movie. you know, before they remind you with the title card.
It's a movie!
And the same thing with, like, the 5-minute cold openings of, like, the Mission Impossible movies, dude. Like,
it
lets you hit the ground running.
Yeah. You're in that world, you're running around with Ethan, or you're running around with James Bond, you know, and you're in the action, and you're supposed to blow your socks off and put you in the mood to watch a spy movie. And this movie is kind of set up to be kind of like a spy movie, kind of like a Bond movie. We're going to, like, exotic locations. We've got a little team put together. There's subterfuge, you know, like, we're trying to...
It's got such solid elements in this movie, dude, but, like, it's executed...
Poorly.
Poorly.
Heavy-handedly and poorly.
Yeah, it's poor. They had points that they want to hit, and they don't seem to know how to get between them and make those in-between moments interesting. Like, in the original Harry Potter series, they had points they wanted to hit, major things that had to happen from the books, okay? But they creatively, in a lot of the movies, a lot of the departures from the books were creative decisions that they made to say, okay, but how can we better cinematically take this, because we're not going to be able to show everything that happened in the book. So cinematically, in a 2.5-hour movie or 2-hour movie, how do we get from point A to point B creatively and make it interesting? What are the small moments that we can put into this movie that show Ron and Hermione and Harry becoming better friends or whatever, more creatively than being able to spend 8 chapters doing it in a book? You know what I mean?
Right.
How can we do this in 5 minutes? And they did that most of the time in those original movies masterfully. And what's crazy is that you have one of the directors from the original movie working on these movies, and J.K. Rowling herself, and they're just missing the boat all over the place.
So without looking at IMDb, did J.K. Rowling write the screenplays for the normal Harry Potter movies? Because she wrote the screenplay for this one.
Yeah.
And if she didn't write the screenplay for the other ones, that would explain a lot.
I don't know.
And, like, don't get me wrong, dude, J.K. Rowling is not, like, this brilliant author, all right?
No.
Like, she's a really great storyteller. She did craft, like, some amazingly really good young person books that, like, people our age can read and enjoy. Yeah. But, like, you're not reading, like, fucking War and Peace or, like, but at the same time, we're not talking, like, how, you know, like, a prolific author, like, for example, Stephen King, which, like, most people have a pretty, like, one-sided opinion. Like, they either really like him or they could just, And I don't know, man. Like, I will say this. I do rather enjoy in the Wizarding World that, like, Dumbledore's relationship failure with Grindelwald, like, it doesn't even, like, it's cool, you know? Because, like, in that point in time, like, in the Wizarding World, it doesn't appear that anyone gives any fuck that those dudes are gay.
No.
In the Muggle world, that would have been like, you keep that shit under fucking wraps, bro.
Right.
Like, that was not the time nor the place, but that was also a time when, you know, the word gay was still meant, like, being happy and joyful and cheerful. And, like, you know, Christmas was a gay time of the year.
Right.
Like, the word hadn't been co-opted yet and used derogatorily.
No, it seems like the Wizarding World has accepted the sexuality aspect, but what their real prejudice is with Muggles and wizards intermarrying.
It's, like, better, but it's not.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah, because I was going to say, like, unfortunately, I couldn't tell when they were in the Muggle world or when they were in the magical world, because, honestly, they kind of just stripped away, just, like, everything. It all looked the same.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, what world am I in right now? Because I literally cannot tell, because it is just so sterile.
In the original Potter movies, they made cinematic choices when they showed when they showed the Muggle world and the Wizarding world. It would be shown very differently. With different colors, different filters, shot in different angles and in different perspectives to show you, to make you feel without telling you directly that here, this is where we are. They could show you cinematically that you are in the Muggle world right now.
Yes. And not only that, like the costumes. Okay. So if you look at the costumes in Harry Potter, where like Minerva is over 100+, because I don't know how old they really are, but I know they can do like immortality type things. And it's like they have very interesting wardrobes. And in this, I'm like, not even any of the older people have any interesting like actual like cloaks and all that. Like there's like a few characters that kind of have something, but I don't know. I just found it to be so boring to look at.
Like Griswold's wardrobe in this one and the last one. Like, okay, so he's wearing that long coat and it kind of suggests being a cloak.
Yeah, right.
Like that you would have seen in the Harry Potter books. It would have been a cloak.
Right.
Or more cloak-like than it, you know, you'd see it in this one. But, like, yeah, it's, like, Queenie, her wardrobe, like, she still looked like she was living in the Muggle world, but that's a difference, I think, in part because those are, New World, like, United States, you know, North America, magic users, which are different than, you know, what we're used to, which is... Mm-hmm. Jolly old England.
The American version of the Wizarding World. I don't know. I just find it to be very sterile and boring.
It is sterile and boring. We could hit some of the plot points, but honestly, they were all very silly. I mean, it was basically like this whole plot line revolved around like bringing a magical fatted calf to somehow determine their elections.
Or something.
What? Right. What? That's how you guys decide the fate of the Wizarding world?
It's like fucking Groundhog's Day for us fucking Muggles, you know?
If we did our elections...
The fucking leader of the Confederation of fucking wizards and witches.
If we based our elections based upon if the Groundhogs saw its shadow or not, is basically what they're going upon for their elections for their... fucking the minister of magic of the entire fucking world.
Dude, what if this animal was tired and just had a bad knee and just decided to start kneeling for everything? Like, that's just a horrible way to run with that. Or this animal is just, it's kind of a jerk. It's like a good thing, but a jerk. I'm like, I'm just going to bend for this guy. Screw you guys.
Well, they still have a vote after, I mean, they still have a vote, but like, they already tell you that everybody believes in this calf thing. And honestly, I think I remember the name of it, but who could care? Who could care? It was like, it's basically a magical calf. And like, so like, whatever, I'm trying to call it. Or
chillin' or something.
Chillin'.
It's a chillin'.
Whatever, who could care?
It doesn't matter.
Like, I just like, it's so bizarre, it's so dumb. You know that Grindelwald's gonna get away in the end. I did not feel... the love between Grindelwald and Jude Law. They're both amazing actors, and I thought they were both great in this movie. I didn't think they were bad in this movie. They were both great, but I didn't feel like any kind of lost connection, even though they kept telling me that I should feel that way. You know, a better movie would have done something to show me why they fell in love.
Yeah.
And they tried to do that in this movie, especially with the opening scene and everything, but like I still didn't feel it. I feel like I was being told that I'm supposed to believe these two were in love at one time and still have a fraction of that, but I didn't feel it.
No, there was no flashbacks to show that. They were trying to hit so many different points in this movie that I honestly couldn't keep up. Yeah. Like, oh wait, what are we trying to tie up now? Oh wait, what's going on with this person? Oh, Credence is still there. What, he's a Dumbledore and he's got a bad wig? Like, I don't know.
Hold on. So let's get to it. So what are the secrets of Dumbledore? So first of all,
he's got that weird magical marriage with Grindelwald.
Okay, yeah, that's one of the
secrets.
So
they can't act on each other.
Right. Right, they can't fight each other because
like a weird like how you can't fucking be compelled to testify against your spouse in court, but in the Wizarding world you can't raise your wand to them.
You can't raise your wand to them. So that's one of the secrets. The other secret, and they say the secrets of Dumbledore, and that's kind of the Dumbledore family, not the secrets of Aldous Dumbledore, but like the secrets of Dumbledore. And one of the secrets of Dumbledore is that Credence is actually
his brother,
Albus Dumbledore's brother's son.
Bastard son.
That he didn't know he had because the wife was sent to an asylum. Or not the wife, but the woman he had an affair with was sent to an asylum, and he didn't know that there was a child that was had. So it's not like they've been neglecting him. I don't know how they found this information out, though. How did they find out that Credence was a Dumbledore?
I don't know.
Did they know the whole... They didn't know the whole time.
I'm not rewatching to find out.
Was there information between movies that I missed?
I don't remember the last
movie. Did it happen in the last movie?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know. It was just sprung upon me that Credence was a Dumbledore. And first of all, I was shocked. But then I was like, wait, am I forgetting something that happened in the last movie? Was there a supplement book in between these movies that I missed? Is there like a comic book? Is there... What did I miss?
Dude, and it doesn't...
What did I miss?
It doesn't matter. He's dying anywhere.
And... Why should I care? Because Credence was such a huge part of the first two movies. It's like, this dude is going to be the bringer of the apocalypse. And like, oh my God, he's so powerful. We got to control him. I mean, that was the whole last movie, right? And now he's just kind of dying. And like, he shows up in a wig sometimes. And you're like, oh, well, I mean, he doesn't even do any of that black smoke stuff that he did last time.
No, he just kind of whimpers around and he writes, I am lonely in a mirror.
I know, like, what are we doing here? And he looks really brooding and like stuff. And I'm like, I thought he was this movie kept doing that thing to me where like, you're like, but I thought that, but you said last, but in the last one there, what did I miss? What am I? That's why I kept exclaiming.
Yes.
I don't usually like say something audibly when I'm watching a movie because I like to be engrossed in the movie and I want to put my headspace in there. But I just kept, I'm like, what's going on right now? I'm like, what was happening? Why should I care about this? Why are they dancing like crabs right now? Okay, so more secrets of Dumbledore. What are some more secrets? We've got Credence is a secret of Dumbledore, and Grindelwald in their affair is a secret of Dumbledore. What are some other secrets of Dumbledore?
I don't know.
Because there's more secrets.
Are there?
Well, I
Oh, look, you got a list?
I
was trying to just get through the movie because, like, halfway through that one assistant chick just takes the Fantastic Beasts. Like, you don't need these
anymore.
What's
her name? Bunty?
Bunty.
Bunty?
Bunty's like, no, we're going to make this movie about something else. Bye.
Okay, according to WizardingWorld.com, which I would assume is pretty... No, stop looking.
I'm looking.
You're spoiling it. Don't
How
look.
How am I spoiling? By reading?
Because I'm going to read it, and then you can react to it. According to
nothing.
Wizarding... Stop looking at it.
I'm looking at you.
Look
I got...
somewhere else.
Where am I
look at the creepy
look?
Doll or something.
Oh, man.
You know hold on. Do you know what's kind of fucked up? Like,
what?
And this is, like, another problem with the movie.
Yeah.
McGonagall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hold on. She wasn't, according to Pottermore...
Right.
She wasn't born until 1935. This movie takes place in 32. How the fuck is she in her 20s and a fucking professor at fucking Hogwarts?
Sacrifice?
The movie just tells you to figure it the fuck out. All right,
I don't know. Okay, so without looking, I'm looking at Prong right now, so please read off these secrets.
So according to WizardingWorld.com, what was Dumbledore's secret? And so this is a list of all the things we discovered in the secrets of Dumbledore, according to them. I'm going to the actual page because I was just looking at the blurb.
Look at it.
I'm going back. So they list the secrets of Dumbledore as we learned who Credence really is. We nailed that one. Dumbledore and Grindelwald admitted they were in love with each other. We got to that one. The blood troth was destroyed. Apparently,
troth?
It's called the blood troth. Whatever.
That's dumb.
Who cares? And then they have three more secrets. But I mean, these don't even seem like secrets to me. These are just things that happened in the movie. Jacob and Queenie got married.
That's not a secret.
Whatever. There's still no reason why those two are together. Their relationship does. It's not that they even look so different, Jacob and Queenie. It's that they have no chemistry together whatsoever. The movie just keeps telling us that they're in love. And it's like,
dude,
why though?
Dude, no, she was evil for a bit, but then she got better.
She just got better.
And they just went back to a normal life, even though she was doing crimes and stuff with Grindelwald dude or something. Yeah. So I don't know. That's not a secret. Okay, what else we got?
Okay, Newt and Tina were reunited just barely.
Dude, she showed up for 5 minutes at the end of the
movie. She was clearly busy doing other stuff when this movie was filming.
Being the head of the Ministry of fucking Magic in North America.
Yeah.
Dude, he should have just went with Bunty. She was all about that.
And the last secret of Dumbledore apparently is that Bunty saved the day. I mean, I guess.
Well, she did bring the mythical calf to Dude.
Right, but that character could have been anybody that.
Yeah, well, you know what? It could have been a turkey sandwich, but they made it Bunty, all right?
I don't know. Some of those aren't secrets.
Also, I forgot to mention earlier, the one thing I really hate about this Wizarding World is that they don't say the spells that they're doing. Like, how did they go from saying the spells in Harry Potter to doing that? Like, I don't know.
Because retconning, Christine.
I don't know. I hate it.
No, you think of it more of it's their educational process.
Yeah. When you're learning to do the spells, you say them, you know, and I mean, I guess you got to still say the Cruciatus curse and stuff like that because Grindelwald's still got to say that. But, and then you got to point at the screen and go, ooh, I know that thing. Remember that thing?
You know what? There is one spell that I do want to learn that actually made me happy in there. And that was the overflowing pastries going down one of the main alleyways. I want to learn that spell.
Look, guys, we're out of time for talking about Dumbledore. I know you guys got so many more points that you want to hit, but honestly...
No, actually, I don't, but, thanks.
I don't want to talk about it anymore.
I forgot.
You know what? It's fine. If you like it, I'm not going to hate on you. You're clearly more of a Potterhead than I am, but we recommend it to at least watch so that you're up to date, and you got to see the crab dance. See the crab dance. In the middle of this dark, dour movie, all of a sudden there's a weird, strange crab dance, and if you haven't seen the movie, none of my explaining of it to you will spoil it for you at all. You'll 100% be entertained by it.
It's a little bit in, like, the trailers, but, like, even that, like, doesn't really spoil.
No, it doesn't do
it
justice.
You got to at least see it for that.
What's crazy, too, is that they do it, and then they cut to another scene of other people doing other things away from that scene, and then they come back to Theseus and Newt, and they're still doing the crab dance.
Okay, a lot of gyrating.
Anyway. We're going to go do a crab dance to the bathroom. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with some Obi-Wan Kenobi talk right after this. This episode of Radio Free Galaxy is brought to you by KFC Mashed Potato Body Wash. It doesn't clean for shit, but boy, does it taste good.
I forgot my line.
All right, three of us are back. Radio Free Galaxy, episode 105. And we're going to talk about some Obi-Wan. We're on episode 4 of the 6-part Obi-Wan Kenobi series streaming on Disney+. And in this episode, we're doing another Rescue Leia thing. Look, we talked about it during the break. Yeah, there's not a lot to talk about this episode. I liked it. It was fine. But overall for the series, I mean, because we're over halfway through right now, we can make some judgments, at least some preemptive judgments on how we feel about this series and what it's doing overall to the Star Wars canon. And I want to ask the question... of the two of you, is this really fucking up at least your canon or your idea of what canon was previously to this? Because I like this series a lot. It's fine. I'm enjoying it, actually watching it. I love the performances in it. I actually really like Reva, whatever. A lot of people don't. I get that and I appreciate their point of view, but I like her. But as far as the relationship between Obi-Wan and Leia, I mean, what is this doing to the canon that you see in the beginning of episode 4, A New Hope, where, you know, you have Leia asking Obi-Wan Kenobi for help like she doesn't even know who the fuck he is? Like, that's the biggest thing for me. And there has to be some resolution to that at some point in this series. Like, there has to be a mind wipe or something that has to happen. Because if you just leave this like it is, how the fuck doesn't she know who Obi-Wan Kenobi is?
Okay, so we'll touch on that real quick because I can actually explain that one. That one I actually have no problem with. Is that Obi-Wan is in hiding. All right. When he gets done with this part of what's happening in the Star Wars universe, he has to be able to go back and be anonymous.
Yeah.
She has to not give up the fact that she knows that Obi-Wan still exists at large. Right. Now, the Inquisition and Vader know that she knows. So, yeah. Fine. There's right. That damage is done.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that gives that hint away in episode 4. Which is fine. That's good. That works out. That's the integrity is kept. I still have my problem with the, you know, when we last met, I was but the learner. Now I am master, only a master evil Darth, and violence ensues. Great. It's a kind of, I guess you can kind of explain that away where it's kind of like, okay, but maybe there needs to be another conflict because Obi-Wan is getting his, he's getting his swerve back and he's getting back into it. So, like, he's getting, but at the same time, yeah, that my canon is being broken, but that started with a Solo story.
Yeah.
Because right. There was a lot of shit involved with that. Like, okay, they kept with the fact that Han did join the Imperial Navy.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not Han was in a fucking orphan street gang, I don't even know if that was really touched upon in the old EU. Doesn't matter. It's a different part of, like, what I guess is now canon. Mm-hmm. This, though, there are some consistencies to it. Like, you know, Owen still kind of like, dude, fuck you, stay away from the kid.
Yeah.
And warns the kid off from him.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Owen has suffered that tragedy of losing his half-brother.
Mm-hmm.
Or step-brother.
Yeah.
But you never really got to see the relationship those two ever had. And Luke, mostly being too old to begin the training, still had fucking normal attachments. Or dysfunctional attachments, because he was too old. I don't know, man. We still got episodes to go.
Yeah.
So there's still more damage that can be done or right. can be undone. But right. I think with Leia leaving that message... Now, okay, the message itself... You know, you served my general. You served my father during the Clone Wars. No, you did not. No Jedi was in service directly to any one person. They were in service to the Republic. Right. Now, is that just a failure of understanding on Leia's part? Probably.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, they served. I guess the Republic and the Senate is, you know. Should be the Republic, really. Right.
But that'd be like telling somebody, like, you know, hey, yeah. General Maddox served fucking, you know, Ron Johnson or fucking, you know, right. pick a politician. No.
Right.
General Mattis serves the country and reports to the commander-in-chief at that time.
Right, not some random senator from Iowa right. or something. Yeah.
Now, politically, there might be some reason that General Mattis has a tie to that person.
Maybe they're on the Armed Services Committee or something.
Right, and you know. Yeah, and you know,
yeah.
Bail Organa was on committees to, like, yeah. you know, because he did want to stop the war.
Right.
Jedi's obviously don't want to persecute war,
right.
but that's what they're called to do, hence why they're generals and commanders mm-hmm. and all that shit.
Yeah.
But I think really... I mean, they could have actually recorded that while, you know, at any point in time, because yeah. they do a good job with the voices, they do a yeah. good job with the thing. It's a hollow message, so right. the fidelity on that doesn't need to be great.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just, to me, the failure of the new canon of Star Wars, when it does fail, there's a lot of things I like about it, but when it does fail, it comes from the over-explaining of things that... When you over-explain them and show me exactly what happened, sometimes it just takes away from the great the greatness of the original Star Wars is that there's mystery. There's
like,
mystery.
Like midichlorians.
Yeah.
Midichlorians.
And that's the number one thing that you point to. When you over-explain things, it takes away the mystical nature of it. So when you tell me that the Force is comprised of, you know, this thing that you can measure, it becomes less magic and becomes more science. And this was never really meant to be science fiction. It's fantasy. And when you try to make it a little too much science fiction, it takes it away from the Star Wars-ness of it all.
Yeah.
And which is supposed to be knights and wizards in space. But, I mean, knights and wizards. So, I don't know. I like this series a lot. I'm digging a lot of it. Actors are killing it. But overall, I just think it's just too much. It's just too much. I don't really need this. I'm enjoying it. I like it. But I don't need it. I don't need it. I don't need to be shown everything. I don't need to know every little detail.
It just takes the fun out of it. I mean, when like you had the first three movies, like your imaginations ran wild with what could have been. But then when it's like put out, like this is the facts, this is how it's always going to be. Yeah. It just sucks the fun out of the mystery of it. Yeah, because like I don't know, like I don't know why movies always think they need to explain why it is. It's like explaining a joke. The joke doesn't become funny anymore because you just completely beat it to death. And the series is fine, and I can separate this from the original three because I love those movies. I love the, you know, the Murder Bears. They're fantastic. But, like, yeah, I don't know. Like, they really are going into detail. They might as well start talking about Vader's taxes at this point.
Yeah, really. I mean, we're, you know, I want to get to more Star Wars stories that are so far removed from this time period that, you know, I mean,
I want Old Republic.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to get that. We're going to get it. It's in the plans. But for now, like, dude, this is just too much in this timeline. We've got, you know, The Mandalorian. We've got The Book of Boba Fett. We've got Obi-Wan Kenobi. We've got the prequel trilogy. We got the sequel trilogy. We got all the animated series. And they all sit in this timeline where even if the story isn't about our original characters, they're popping up fucking willy-nilly all the time and altering canon with every single episode that comes out. Alters canon or rewrites it into a new way. And I just don't need all of that.
Dude,
I don't need it.
You can make Tatooine into a drinking game for how often they either go to Tatooine or mention Tatooine. Like, I want to see other parts of this vast galaxy, man.
Right. And with the whole Tatooine thing, like, dude, there's a, like, they're slowly undoing, or they're showing, they're basically making Luke oh so wrong. Like, Luke said, He tells fucking 3PO, well, if there's a bright shining center of the galaxy, you're in the planet farthest from.
Yeah.
Like,
but, and C-3PO should say to him, well, actually, I come here all the time.
Yeah, like,
well, R2 should actually say it. Yeah. 3PO should be like, what the hell are you talking about? We've never been here before. Because he gets mind wiped religiously.
Yeah.
Well, not religiously. He's at least mind wiped at the end of 3.
Anyway, I don't know.
I actually have one thing that I'd like to mention from this episode that kind of threw me back is when Obi-Wan decides to do the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle trench coat thing with Leia. I was waiting for the fedora to come out because I'm like, dude, really? You're just going to hide her under the coat and just waltz past everyone. Like, that was hilarious.
It was kind of hilarious.
I was like, uh-uh.
You're going to put a trench coat on?
I can't remember her name, but like the chick who's helping Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
I really like her character.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
Because and I can't wait for Andor.
Yeah.
Because like I want to see like just like some of the despicable and terrible things this dude has had to do.
Yeah.
One, because like he alludes to it in Rogue One.
Right.
Two, it's going to be so gratifying so I can just rub it in people's faces when I, you know, to have that serious to back up my, you know, the Rebels are just a bunch of fucking terrorists. Yeah. I mean, you know, and it's always that way.
Yeah.
People get labels, but it's just fun to poke at people about it because then somebody is like, oh, so you're saying during the American Civil, you know, Revolutionary War, we were terrorists? Yes, we were.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we were.
We were.
according to the government that was in power, we were terrorists and guerrilla fighters, and
victors always write the history books.
Yep.
It matters if you win or lose, I guess. So, right. Anyway.
But, there is actually, and I think it was in the last episode, and if it was in the third episode and I didn't mention it, there's a part when Leia asks Obi-Wan about the Force, and his explanation of it is perfect. Because he doesn't say the whole fucking how he was trained by Qui-Gon, the whole midichlorian thing, because Obi-Wan doesn't believe in that same school of thought, which is kind of funny because his mentor did. Yeah. And then, like, you know, she's like, you know, when you're afraid and you're in the dark and the light comes on, how do you feel? Yeah. And she's like, safe. That's what the Force is.
Yeah.
How the Force feels. And it's like perfect.
That was in the last episode, but that was a really cool
explanation.
It's a very Obi-Wan explanation. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't like, and he wouldn't, and like, that's not an explanation I think he would have given to just a child.
No.
Like, Luke at like 16 to 18 years old, whatever, however old he is, when he gets, you know, his whole world is turned upside down. He is like, wants to become a Jedi like his father. Bad choice of words, but, you know, he didn't know any better. But like, when he wants to become, you know, he's learning about the Force, and Obi-Wan could have just like, hey, This is how the Force feels, man. When it feels like that, then you know you're on you're following the light side. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. So Obi-Wan Kenobi. Any other points you guys want to hit? Adam, you spent.
I think it's gonna be fucking pretty cool. The next few episodes, because it should just like should all be downhill.
Yeah.
I hope.
Yeah, I think we'll get another confrontation with Vader, and I think there has to be some kind of ultimate showdown with Reva.
Yeah,
too,
I hope so.
And I heard they've already greenlit a second season, so we're not gonna get an ultimate conclusion to the whole story. I don't like that.
I don't like that at all.
That's kind of disappointing.
I was hoping that this would just be a mini series that stayed six episodes, and it was just like, look, I didn't want an Obi-Wan series. I didn't want to know what he was doing in the desert for those 19, 20 years. But if you just tell me a small little story, I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
I did want to know, but like, I think they're riding off the success of the Mandalorian seasons, which I don't think is a good barometer, because you're looking at like different subsections of the fan base. Like, okay, fans at large, yes, we always do usually want more Star Wars, but like, dude, The Mandalorian scratched like, you know, me and my people's itch, you know, like, dude, we're like about Mandalorian culture. What's cool. Like when we were at fucking Celebration, how many Mandalorian fucking people did we see versus stormtroopers versus Jedi versus Sith? Dude, they were fucking represented.
They were deep. Mm-hmm. They were definitely deep. Especially that year, though, that was like just dropping the trailer for the first season. That was 2019 when we went to Celebration. And they were just dropping at that Celebration the first trailer, I think. Or they were.
No,
like,
they dropped the trailer for.
Episode 9. Right. Yeah. And they did have a panel though for the Mandalorian they weren't even at the trailer stage yet, I think.
No, right? They were still in like pre-production stage.
I think they had already chosen who they wanted.
Yeah.
For cast.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because I think Pedro Pascal was there.
Yeah.
I
was busy chasing Ewoks, so it was hard to remember.
Yeah. I can't wait to see Diego Luna and. Because he is, I watched him in other stuff, and he is good.
He is great.
Such a fucking,
Especially if you've seen Massive Talent, he is so good.
So good.
He is really great.
Pedro Pascal is in Massive Talent.
Well, and in Narcos, Pedro Pascal and Diego Luna are in it, but in different seasons. Yeah. And Scoot McNally. Who's great.
Scoot McNary?
Yeah, that's it. I don't know. It was fucked up his name. But he is great, dude. He is awesome in that.
Well, there's Skeet Ulrich and there's Scoot McNary, and I always get them.
Skeet Scoot?
Right. Yeah. Skeet Scoot. You know what? I think they would be fucking pretty cool. Like, they in Star Wars, I'm sure they could find something. Like, I think Scoot would probably be a good Imperial.
Yeah.
Actually, I think both would make some fucking interesting and cool Imperials.
The odd couple of Star Wars. Oh, you know what?
We gotta mention that Hall of Dead Jedi that was in episode 4.
That they
had in the Inquisitor's... that's the Inquisitor's, like, palace, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like that's their fucking citadel or whatever.
Their citadel, yeah, exactly. That hall, and then with the youngling at the end, and I'm sure there were... Because they were showing us close-up shots of each one of those Jedi. I'm sure there were some cameos that we were supposed to know off the top of our head. But even as a pretty hardcore Star Wars fan, none of them, like, rung a bell. A couple of them looked familiar. I'm like, oh, that's that one dude. And I'm like...
that one guy.
Oh, that's the one with the head thing. And I'm like, okay. But, like, none of them, their names, like, jumped right to my head. I guess that makes me a bad Star Wars fan, but whatever.
Well, the same thing, dude. But I'm not, like, a person remember. I remember the tech and the planets and shit like that.
So anyway, that's our Obi-Wan Kenobi review. And that's the end of our episode for this week. Thank you guys all for listening. We really appreciate it. If you could and you have time, please remember to leave us a rating and review on the two places that you can do that. One is the Spotify app. If you listen to Radio Free Galaxy, at the top of the episode, there's a little star thing, and you can just press on it and leave us 1 star, 2 star, 3 star, 4 star, or if we've had a particularly good episode, maybe 5. That would be nice.
Oh, yeah.
And that we'd appreciate that if you could do that, or leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It helps the algorithm to get our podcast out to more people when they search for a pop culture podcast or movie reviews or anything like that. So please do that. And thanks for listening. Check out So Geek Girl on TeePublic. SEWGEEKGIRL, all one word. She's got some really cool designs. If you don't know, that's Christine. And she's got some really cool t-shirt designs. Mine just came in the mail this week. I got a tank top, a black tank top with the...
with Lilith the Succubus.
Lilith the Succubus on it.
The sexy bus.
Yeah, and it looks really cool. She's got a gnarly, toothy gash going on, and
it's abandon all hope, ye who enter here, man.
Yeah, it looks dope on a t-shirt. I got one, so you guys should get one too. And also check out the Radio Free Galaxy YouTube channel. We're up to like over 650 videos or something. I don't know.
You just put a bunch of new ones on just today.
Well, 3.
It's not. Well, but that's a whole lot.
It's a whole minute and a half for your viewing pleasure. So I got a Star Years toy commercial up, and a Masters of the Universe commercial, and a Mr. T cereal commercial I put up today.
Yeah.
So I pity the fool that doesn't listen to Radio Free Galaxy.
I pity the fool who don't eat my cereal.
That's right. So thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time on Radio Free Galaxy.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.